All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again talking episode 3 of Survivor Island of the Idols. My name is Colin, no Dom this week, but joining me is a recurring guest on the podcast. You guys, of course, know him as the host and showrunner and executive producer of the original incarnation of Survivor Maryland. Welcome back to the show, Austin Trupp. Austin, how are you?
God, that's the first time you had to clarify that there's a new incarnation of it. Times have changed.
I realized as I was mid-sentence that it could be confusing if people, as they should, rush to their computer to Google Survivor Maryland if they haven't heard of it yet, to make sure they understand which one is you, because now there are, as you have referenced, become several, I believe, iterations of Survivor Maryland. The second generation is currently airing, and a third generation has already done at least a couple of seasons, right?
We're sort of technically on the fourth generation right now. There's a fourth host, so it's crazy.
Wow.
But it's weird, like, there's now, I guess there's just new fans in the online community all the time, because now I still see people going, wait, there are these college survivors? And I'm like, where were you for the last 2 years? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, for anyone interested, how can they find Survivor Maryland?
Well, don't watch it because I'm not part of it anymore. No, I'm just kidding. You can go to YouTube and search Survivor Maryland. I did seasons 1 through 5, although season 1 doesn't exist. But 2 through 5 are all fun watches, except the production value gets better over time. So just search it on YouTube, and then season 6 kind of builds off what I was doing. So wow, I'm totally out of the mode of like pitching this. At this point, I'm just like in retirement. But yeah, definitely if you need more Survivor, you absolutely should go watch it. If you've never watched Fan-Made Survivor before or College Survivor, I think it'll surprise you and surpass your expectations. So I won't set the expectations too high, because that's the key to failure, but go give it a shot.
Yeah, I would never want to overhype Survivor Maryland, Austin, as you
know. Could never. You've never once done that in your life.
Yeah, but for anyone interested, genuinely some of the strongest Survivor content that has come out over the last several years, and we actually did podcasts talking about Season 5 Survivor Maryland All-Stars, so if you get caught up on that, feel free to check in on those as well. But Austin, let's get into Island of the Idols, which is what we are primarily here to talk about today. And I could see Maryland coming up potentially a couple of times later on this episode. But before we get there, I would love to hear just what your expectations were entering this season.
Well, I feel like every time we have a season that has universally low expectations, I think everybody has been looking forward to season 40. I feel like I heard a couple podcasts from the Dom and Colin show about season 40, but maybe I'm misthinking. I don't know. Maybe
you may have been on one of them.
I may have been on one of them, yes. Well, there were like 16 of them. So I think that speaks to the fact that people were pretty excited for season 40, and season 39 kind of got lost in the shuffle. But I've been excited for season 39 for a long time, and I think that, yeah, like we just talked about, the key to success is low expectations, and the fact that everybody overlooked it means that, you know, I kind of feel like when they're casting for only one newbie season, like, they really work on knocking it out of the park. They've got like so much of a pool to pick from for just one season. And I mean, I'm really enjoying it so far. I don't think it's as strong of a start as like David versus Goliath, which just raced out of the gates, but I think it's a really strong start to a season in general.
I am completely with you on that front in terms of this being first and foremost a cast that I absolutely love, and the episodes themselves, I would say, have been exciting and surprising to me, and that is a great combination, especially for a pre-merge of any season. And the concern I would have, and I guess this is kind of a two-part question, is about the Island of the Idols itself. And I guess I'll begin with, how is the Robin Sandra being back element going for you? Are you enjoying the kind of weekly dose of nostalgia?
Well, okay, so I have a theory in life about Pitbull. This is going to relate eventually. Pitbull,
the singer?
Yeah, or the rapper. A singer is not really the right word. But my theory is that, because Pitbull has a lot of great songs, but Pitbull is terrible. And my theory is that Pitbull's songs are great because his parts are so bad that it just like whets your appetite for what's coming next. So like when you get to like the Kesha chorus, you're really excited because it's not Pitbull.
Well, so in my experience, Pitbull songs are good because the only environment in which you're listening to Pitbull songs are like fun atmospheres.
I guess so. I guess that can be true too. But I still like, you're still not getting excited during the Pitbull chorus. You're getting or the Pitbull part. You're getting excited for the chorus.
Sure.
But my point is, I honestly am like so carefree right now about Island of the Idols because it's not Edge of Extinction. And I feel like that was the Pitbull. Like the fact that we now have votes that mean something and you get voted out that's it, as Sandra would say. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm not even that concerned. I mean, there's things I don't like about the twist. I know you're on the record as not being a huge fan of it, but just the return to the normalcy of the game and the tribal councils, that means the most to me. And so I think there have been a lot of fun moments for it. I think there's a lot of potential. And I think the fact that I don't know what's going to happen with it week to week is at least interesting, even if not 100% good for the game. But I really enjoyed this week's iteration of it. And so far, I don't think it's ruining the season, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I frame it as a two-part question because I think there is the Rob and Sandra element, which is kind of separate from the twist mechanism itself. It happens to be Rob and Sandra delivering these idols, but the second part I would say is this opportunity for a new idol to go in every single week. And I think it ties into kind of a follow-up question just about the evolution of Survivor, which is based on what we've seen between, you know, something as extreme as Edge of Extinction and now the theme of the season being something where on a weekly basis there is very likely to be a major shakeup in the dynamic of the game just by virtue of how powerful an idol can be. What do you feel like we could potentially, and I'm not asking you to hypothesize about future themes, but in terms of season 41 and beyond, my main concern is just that I don't know if it's the producers or if it's the network, but someone clearly has lost all faith in the game, and these kind of season altering twists I could see becoming completely standard, and these over the top themes and like advantage of the week not slowing down but potentially even picking up the pace. I personally am not super enthused about the direction this seems to be headed, but it sounds like to you, it sounds to me like what you were saying before is, as long as it continues to be at least better than Edge of Extinction, you'll be fine.
I mean, there's definitely a breaking point beyond just Edge of Extinction. Like, having too many advantages and having an advantage get in and idol get in the whole time. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pitfalls we can go down.
Pitbull with falls?
I wasn't going to do it, but yeah, it was too close. Maybe one of the future themes is that you get, like, tossed into the Spartan pit from 300 and you have to, like, fight your way out to get an idol. But it's a tough question because I think in some ways, like, I wish that there would be a sense of that we've already evolved the game to the point where it's so dynamic. Like, I think I had a thought that all these crazy twists and the different idols and advantages popping up all the time would lead to more static and stable gameplay that would go in the opposite direction. But it really doesn't seem to be going in that direction at all. If anything, you know, the chaos and the constant maneuvering and alliances shifting is only increasing every season. And so I feel like the game is, and I don't mean this in a bad way, the game has been broken in the sense that those alliance structures and the kind of, you know, early season, early 20s where we had these static alliances going all the way through, I mean, that doesn't really exist anymore. I don't think it can exist anymore, whether you have idols or not. Like, there's just enough variance and enough, you know, people go in understanding that you have to make moves and you have to make big decisions and you have to shake things up. And, you know, they're also casting more fans and more people, even if they're not totally fans, they understand where the game is at. If they're watching a couple seasons, they know it's not, you know, Borneo out there.
Yeah.
So,
I still do feel like we get Ghost Island or Game Changers where it is pretty clearly one majority alliance the entire time. And it probably would have potentially been the case on Edge of Extinction were it not for Rick Devens going on that crazy idol run.
Well, I was thinking that kind of the Gavin, but even, I mean, the thing is, though, these aren't just born out of day one alliances, really. I mean, eventually some, you know, coalition of people comes together after all these various moves. I mean, what was it, Gavin, Lauren, and Victoria, Gavin and Victoria running the game? I mean, we didn't see that happen from day one. Yes, there's an alliance that emerges, and the game structure is always going to dictate that, and that's why it's good to have idols and it's good to have advantages to shake things up. But I don't, you know, I think I don't really have a good answer. I mean, a lot of people thought that the theme craziness and all the twists that came from the idea that you have to provide something new every season because we're not changing locations. And maybe that'll just mean that eventually we're going to switch locations. Like, I mean, it's been what, seven seasons in a row at this point in Fiji? What's the actual number?
I guess the first one would have been Millennials versus Gen X. So however many that is. Yeah, this is number 7.
39 minus 33 plus 4. Yeah. I mean, going on 7-8 seasons or whatever in the same place, maybe the answer is that in a year or two that they just are ready to move and to shake it up, and that's enough of a switch, and then we just go back to having the normal idols. I don't really know what the answer is, and I don't know how they can keep topping themselves with these twists. Like, what more can you actually do? Like, maybe the answer is to give everybody an idol on day one and never give idols again. And that would be kind of interesting, I guess, but a little bit crazy.
That would be. Yeah. I feel like at this point, why not give it a shot?
I don't know. I mean, we haven't even seen. I totally forgot until just now about the whole auction money thing from season 40, the like Probst Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's where it evolves to, and that becomes a staple of the game, and that's how we go forward with this new generation. I really have no idea, but yeah, I'm just sort of rambling. I don't have an answer to your question, but I think there's a breaking point where it can't go any further, and it seems like we're getting pretty close to it.
Right. I do think in-game currency could be the next step. And, you know, ever since seeing The Genius, that's been something we've been begging for on Survivor for a long time. But we'll have to see how that ends up being implemented. My big concern is just I feel like with Edge of Extinction in particular, and I get the sense that this is roughly the page you were on, having no real sense of finality to any of the votes, and then obviously seeing the way that ends up playing out, it felt like not even watching Survivor in retrospect. It felt like, what are we even doing here? And with the advantage of the week era that we seem to be in, my main concern for 41 and beyond is just maintaining something that I can at least mentally compartmentalize as Survivor as I have always thought of it. And
I'm going to go out and say that now that we do know that it's a season 40 element, I don't think we're going to see Edge of Extinction past 40. I think it was a test run. I think there's a reason, very clear reason, why they have it on that season. And I'm on the record as saying for you that I think that's the last time we see it.
Okay, I certainly hope you are right. So I have not personally wanted to declare it with any kind of certainty, because that would, of course, just jinx it, and Edge of Extinction would become the new staple going forward. But I am cautiously optimistic that what you are saying will hopefully prove to be true. So, Austin, I think let's get into some of this season 39 cast and the specifics of what we've seen play out lately. And I have one place in particular that I definitely want to start, and that is with University of Maryland alum, although not Survivor Maryland alum, Chelsea. Although, by the way, you should, even if this is not true, there should be some Chelsea origin story where, like, she applied for Survivor Maryland, but you didn't cast her, and it was like Michael Jordan getting cut from the team as a sophomore, and it like inspired her to go on the actual show and kill it. What have you been thinking of Chelsea so far?
Well, there is a little bit of an origin story where I was aware of her. I don't know at what point of my school run. I mean, we didn't run in the same circles, and I think she's a year older than me, but like, I knew she existed. I'd seen, she had been very public about her application or audition video. So I feel like we had messaged on Twitter or something at some point. And I'm not really sure why I never recruited her. I think I realized it too late. And it was like maybe in the middle of Guts and Glory. Like, I could have just brought her in as a random person in All Stars, but she could have been the Faluke before, spoiler, but before Faluke happened. But, well, there's actually – did you know that there are two Terps on this season?
I did. I was going to get to that later. Yeah, I found out because you favorited some tweet. It showed up on my timeline. There is a second
– That's the president of Maryland.
What's that? Oh,
the university. There's no president of the state.
The source of the tweet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nora, for anyone wondering at home, also a Maryland Terrapin.
Yeah.
Did you know Nora? Did you try to get her on Survivor Maryland?
I did not. But the crazy thing about Nora is that, like, in her cast bio, it says she's from North Potomac, Maryland. And that is, like, literally the neighborhood I am from. Like, that's where I grew up. And it's not, like, some big town that everybody knows. The backstory is that there's Potomac, Maryland, which is one of the richest places, like, in the country. And then nearby, there is Gaithersburg. But certain people in Gaithersburg decided, no, we have to sound more like the rich town. So we're going to call it North Potomac instead and just jack up the prices of the real estate. So I'm from North Potomac, Maryland, which is this very small, like, sub town in Maryland. And she literally lives there and it says that there. And I don't know. Like, I guess I was wondering, like, from your perspective, if you didn't know that Lynn Spillman wasn't casting this season, would you recognize that this is a markedly different cast from previous ones?
I think I would have noted the racial diversity, to be sure, but overall, I honestly felt like Lynn in her last couple of years was honestly doing some of her better work that we'd seen lately between David versus Goliath, and I really liked a lot of the newbies on Edge of Extinction. So I think this cast does stand out in some ways, but I certainly wouldn't have said that I would be able to nail that this was, like, distinctly not a Lynn Spillman cast. Why? Does she have some anti-Maryland bias?
Maybe. I don't know. But, well, I mean, I think that well, A, there's a question of how influential was she for those last couple of casts you were talking about. I feel like that, to me, it sounds like it was a valid question to ask. The point aside is that one of the things I really liked about this season is that I feel like I've always felt like Survivor has a lot more real people compared to a lot of reality shows. People that are a little bit closer to the realm of normalcy, like maybe they're the people in your life that you think are, like, larger than life personalities and characters, but also that you can relate to and that you understand. But I feel like this cast especially seems like, and I think you said this last week, seems very relatable and normal, and not in, like, a boring way, but they're, like, genuine people who are excited to be there and have real lives and are from a bunch of different backgrounds and have a lot of diversity, as is, you know, real life. And obviously Nora is one of those people that I see myself in one way just because of the same hometown. Obviously, I don't really think that me and Nora are that similar. Anyway, that was a long tangent to get back to Chelsea, which is crazy to me because Chelsea does feel like, I mean, we're about the same age, went to the same school. We both love Survivor. It's kind of crazy to me to see somebody on the screen that has that exact same sort of passion. And I mean, she's been applying for an absurd amount of years. It is a shame that she didn't play in Maryland. That's really on me. But yeah, I think she's been doing really well and doing everything you'd want from a super fan. Like, she hasn't been over the top. She's been playing smart and keeping her head in the game. I really like the comment she made this week where, you know, the whole group is there and Dean does his flub with we got to split the votes. And she's just, like, breaking the awkward silence with yeah, everyone's here. it was just a great quip that kind of set the stage. And I feel like it seems like everybody trusts her and that she's in a really good spot. And on her tribe, there's kind of one person of this on each tribe. I feel like on her tribe, she's the one who gets presented as kind of a main swing player. And the other tribe, it's Tommy, who I'm sure we'll talk about later. But that's exactly where you want to be on, you know, day 1 through 9 or day 1 through 12, being in a spot where you have a lot of connections and you can make decisions, but you don't have to drive the decisions and people don't have to be worried about you. So she's, like, the right blend of has a lot of capability. She seems pretty athletic, but there's nothing threatening about her at all. And clearly she's not seen as, like, a Molly level of Parvati type. So, I mean, I feel like that's, like, I mean, I really do see myself in her in a lot of ways, and it's just crazy. I mean, yeah, she literally went to the University of Maryland, and it's very exciting.
Yeah. Honestly, a true shame on you for not putting her on that show. And I take back everything nice that I've ever said about Survivor Maryland, but yeah, very impressed with Chelsea to this point, and not just Chelsea, this entire women's alliance that we've been seeing and hearing quite a bit about to this point on this Orange team, all five of them, to me, I feel like there are reasons to be believing in. I feel like Missy's looked good pretty much every week. Elaine's been one of the breakout stars, and Elizabeth and Karishma have both gotten a decent amount. Karishma, as we'll get to, I'm sure, soon in terms of this week, got a lot of visibility here. It really seems like this could be a lasting thing that I've talked about these last couple of weeks being something I'm very much believing in. Are you buying into the hype about this Women's Alliance?
Well, I really do like all five of them. I think they bring a ton to the table each individually. Obviously, I've talked about Chelsea, big fan there. As you said, Missy's been, you know, equal to Chelsea in terms of being in a great position. I think Missy's crushed it in every scene we've seen of her, even as far as kind of trying to mend the relationship with Aaron after the first vote. I mean, Missy's great. There's every reason to be excited about her. And I've also really been, I think one of my biggest pleasant surprises has been Elizabeth so far. Like going in, I did listen to some pregame content this year, and, you know, she's an Olympic athlete. If she says she wants to be on Survivor, there's a pretty good shot she gets on Survivor no matter what. But, you know, I don't think she was a big fan coming in, and certainly the first episode, you know, had some pitfalls with God, I'm saying that word again. Some pitfalls in playing against Boston Rob and Fire. But she seemed a lot sharper, and I feel like as a competitor, she's really settled into the game and seems to be having a really good grasp on it. So those three in particular have stood out to me in a positive way. And yeah, Elaine, now that she's settled in, seems great too.
Yeah.
Karishma, I'm not sure I'm confident about the five being a really long-term threat as a unit. I think those four are really threatening individually. But I kind of like, I mean, this episode really stands out as even more so than about Vince. I think this episode really was about Karishma. And my question was like, why? Like, I don't think they would just do that to set her up as a decoy boot. They could have done that in a little bit of a simpler way. And maybe the point is that she, you know, becomes a wild card and kind of blows up this Women's Alliance. That's one scenario I guess I could see, because otherwise why give her so much focus and present her as such an outlier from the rest of the group?
Yeah, we see this scene of her this week where she slices her hand open. And by the way, that scene was featured in the next time on Survivor in some promos during the week and in the beginning of the episode where they do the coming up on Survivor that has replaced the previously on Survivor. And then before we even hit the first commercial break, this big event they've been hyping up all week is quickly resolved as no big deal. But it really did seem just like a reason to get Karishma on screen and presenting her situation as feeling like, even though she's part of this group that, at least as far as the votes are concerned, has the majority to this point and would conceivably have the majority going forward here, she still does feel like no one really cares about her as a person, and she feels socially, I think, on the outs more so than politically. And yeah, that's what I was going to ask is, while this Women's Alliance does appear to be in control and feeling good about each other when Tribal Council rolls around, I do feel like if there was a way that this was going to crumble, it would probably have something to do with Karishma being unhappy here. But I could see that being something a lot further down the line rather than anytime soon.
I think that's – I don't think it's going to blow up next week, and then they have a good grasp on numbers regardless. But the fact that they now split the votes on her, which – I mean, it's, in a lot of ways, it did seem like a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, if she's going to say, I don't really feel like I'm part of the group with you girls, you know, to Elizabeth, Missy, and Chelsea, then she's probably not going to – now they're not going to feel good about feeling on the ends with her. But I also just like I did really like her story in terms of like – how have we not had an Indian woman or Indian person cast on Survivor before in 39 seasons? How is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we talked about it would have been David versus Goliath, the girl who I want to say went out fifth place, whose name might have been Natalia. Is that a person?
Yeah.
She was only the second Muslim person we'd ever had on Survivor, which is just mind-blowing. And I'm sure there are many others that are going to pop up along the way that we're going to say to ourselves, how is this the first time ever that we've had a person of this descent on Survivor that is like so extraordinarily common in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in some ways, if those communities aren't cast on it and aren't represented and then aren't watching, then it's a cycle. Like, they're not applying, you don't get the pool to pick from, and then you don't get the most interesting people. But in that sense, just recruit them. Anyway, I'm glad they resolved that. I think that
– has there ever been a Native American on Survivor?
Well, it is Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah, you're so, right.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, not that I know of, but I'm someone has to be like 1/16th Native American who's been on before, right?
I would guess so, but that seems like one possible oversight.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's like terrain. I mean, I think it would be great to see, but I don't know what, you know, we're in this. I don't want to get too PC here, but we're in this realm of like tribal council and all of these, you know, tribalistic symbolism, and maybe people would feel like that's kind of appropriation.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should have representation. If people from those, you know, origins want to be on the show, they should be on the show.
There have been more University of Maryland alums on this season than there have been Indian people who have played Survivor ever.
Hey, Maryland is the pipeline to Survivor. That's not a knock on the show.
I wish Maryland would become the pipeline to Survivor. I know a lot of people have some Survivor Maryland alums that they would like to see out there on the real show.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the college Survivor continues to blossom, it really can serve as the minor leagues of of Survivor.
That's right, the farm system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, in terms of Karishma's long-term prospects, do you see her, if there is some sort of falling out, getting the upper hand as that plays out? Like, she's the one who jumps ship at the right time, or is she going to be the one who is left high and dry?
I guess I kind of see it's a tough question. I feel like, to me, you know, 10 seasons ago, I would have said, yeah, you know, the person who's on the outs, the wild card, whether it's Karishma or maybe Jamal and the other tribe, those are the kind of people that either they break out and make a move at the right time and they shake up the game, or you know, or they flame out or whatever. But now it's like, you know, there isn't really, like, you can be the one to shake things up and there isn't a right or a wrong side. It just, you know, catapults into the series of the next moves. Like, somebody shakes things up in the pre-merge and then, you know, it changes five more times in the post-merge. So I think that Karishma is being set up to be a person who blows things up. And in the short term, if you survive, I think that's good enough. But I don't see her winning out compared to someone like Missy or Chelsea or Elizabeth. Maybe she kind of knocks out one of those three and that's where we're going. But I think Karishma kind of has a mid-game presence to me. Like, I think she has a role to play, and the fact that she survived this episode, has this story really built out, and has such a wild card personality is going to make her pretty interesting. But I don't see her being an end-game person for that. I don't think – it seems like she's doubting the connections too much to really go too far in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on board with that and very excited to see – what ultimate conflict does arise with Karishma, because I do feel like it is just a matter of time.
And she has like the most amazing, like, deer in headlights face.
Yeah. I think Karishma is probably exceeding their wildest expectations based on these first three episodes when they put her out there.
It's interesting because she came in as, you know, she's a personal injury lawyer. I feel like those people are like, just like I feel like you got to just be like an aggressive go-getter person to be in that realm.
Wrong person to slice their hand open then, if you're production. You're the last person.
I did say that to Danny. I was like, can't she just like represent herself?
Yeah.
I will say, while we're on that the whole scene played very strange to me, and it doesn't make sense to me that, you know, eight people would absolutely do nothing. So I'm not sure if that just kind of manifested as, like, in her mind, people weren't caring for it. I just can't imagine that nobody said anything or did anything. I don't know. It seemed off to me.
I agree that it seemed off. And another thing that seemed off was her series of reaction confessionals to that event. While I think a couple of them were absolutely as they appeared on TV, there also seemed to be some tricky editing near the end there when she was talking about how each and every person on this tribe is dead to me. I could easily see that coming from some different point in time.
It's certainly possible. I mean, that kind of thing happens all the time. And even that kind of reminds me that I think that the Girls Alliance thing is not as clear as it, you know, they're making it appear on the show. I think we always get a very oversimplified version of what the alliances actually are. And there's been a lot of days since the first vote. And there was a quote where Aaron's talking about the Girls Alliance, and he said, we need to make sure that tribal dynamic doesn't happen in terms of like girls versus guys. And then it immediately cuts to the guys like trying to get together and talking to Vince. And in my mind, that quote is probably him saying, I need to get in with the girls and make this separate alliance. Not that he needs to break up the tribal dynamics by reinforcing the tribal dynamics. So, you know, I think they're taking confessionals all the time to represent a certain storyline and narrative, and I don't begrudge them that, but I think you're right. There certainly could have been later on. Maybe it's after they split the votes that everyone said to her.
Yes. Yeah. And to, I guess, clarify, the more we talk about this, I am kind of inclined to backtrack from what I said earlier. Like, I do absolutely believe in this women's alliance in the short term, and I believe in all of them individually, but I don't mean to make it sound like I think this is the fivesome that's going to run the game for sure.
Okay, let's make a bet. If all five of them make it to the final five, you win, and otherwise, because you seem so confident.
Right, yeah. I would probably say, I would be tempted to make a bet along the lines of three of them make it to the finale.
Ooh, I was going to put the over-under at 2.5, so I would take the under that on that, and I kind of feel like two of them will make it, so... We can lock in that.
Okay, bet. I'll take the over 2.5, and you can have the under 2.5.
Are we thinking the finale is six people? Probably.
I am guessing the finale will be six people.
Okay. I'll take the under.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, in the given that you have equity for the finale to only be five people, the under is probably a lot stronger. But
it's probably six. My feeling is Missy and Elaine and. I would love for Chelsea to get in there. That would be probably this. I don't know. Anyway,
those are the three that I would pick at this hour as the three that I see making it there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm sure we will talk more about many people in this women's alliance when we hit the edit zone. But let's quickly touch on the guys on this tribe. And you referenced a very funny interaction when Vince got sent off to Exile Island. Or whatever it's called, Island of the Idols, where Elizabeth gives some confessional about how likely he is to have an idol. And when this kind of concern is voiced to the group, Dean says, well, hey, we could just split the vote. And Chelsea points out, well, everyone else is right here. I wanted to quickly give you an opportunity, since I haven't heard a whole lot of Dean discussion going on in the podcast world lately. What do you think of Dean this season?
Well, I am a member of the Dean's List, as I've said.
I only brought it up so you could make that pun.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the setup there. I mean, look, Dean recognized his mistake. It was pretty obvious. I don't think it makes a big difference because they were going to split the votes. Everyone knows they're going to split the votes. And so, I mean, you know, was it a smart comment? No. Was it a game ender? Clearly not. He wasn't even brought up in the discussion. I thought that's where we were going for a bit, but... you know, there's so many other dynamics besides that. I don't know. There hasn't been enough of Dean to really say. I appreciate that his voting confessional was also self-aware about what he did. What was one of my favorite little quips there? I think that he seems like people like him and that he's tied in enough. And, you know, even with the guys being in the minority, allegedly, like, his name still never come up in any of the discussions to Target. So, I don't think Dean's going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think there's really a reason to, unless this showman's preview really, you know, explodes into some reason to target him. I'm not really sure. I'm not going to read into much the preview. So, I'm pro Dean. He's very good looking. So there's that to be said.
Oh, is there that to be said? No one said that to me to this
point. It's an important thing to say. It's just, these are just stating observations. It's worth mentioning.
Yeah. I have, high hopes for Dean continuing to pop up in fun and hilarious ways, although...
There was also a great scene of him tripping right before that whole thing, and I really appreciated the editors on that one.
That's what I mean. I feel like Dean is going to be, hopefully, a really fun source of that kind of entertainment this season, although, as things stand now, just based on these first few episodes and... how little content he has gotten compared to most of the other people on his team. I'm not someone who has Dean super high up my list of contenders at this point, but that's fine. Plenty more than, that's not what we need out of Dean necessarily at this point. And maybe there is a world where he could be the front runner immediately on the heels of Chris Underwood. I suppose that argument could also be made. But yeah.
But just that an attractive male is stumbles early and then wins. Is that the new norm?
Yeah, while never appearing on the TV show. Right. And any thoughts? We'll get to Vince and the Island of the Idols and, of course, how he ends up getting voted out here. But did you have any major takeaways at this point on Aaron or Tom?
Well, on Tom, another one you've teed up for me. Tom laid low is a great way to describe him, because he's really, I mean, he's just kind of chilling there. He's got the dad moniker now. I don't have a lot to say about Tom. He seems like, you know, I guess the downside of what I thought Elizabeth could be, of not someone who really gets the game and, or maybe gets it, but doesn't, you know, care about aggressively strategizing or going balls to the walls on that. I feel like he's the kind of downside of the athlete stereotype. It's not that I'm disliking him, and I think there's certainly potential there, but he looks a little bit too much like if Mike Scoopin like gained some muscle,
mm-hmm.
got a little older. So that's like, I'm not loving that. Yeah, I'm fine with him. Aaron, I think that there was a strong reaction to episode one. It seems like he's gotten back in well enough. If he was really, you know, blowing stuff up at camp still, I don't think he would have survived past the next day. So I think more to come on that. I think there's potential with Aaron, and I don't think we've seen the last of him anytime soon, but I'm interested to see where it goes.
All right. So I'm sure we will have more on the orange team a little later. Let's check in with the purple team here. Shout out to great friend of the podcast, Curtis Morrison, who has been tracking how all of the time is being split in these episodes between each tribe and the challenges and the Island of Idols and Tribal Council and all of, you know, everything that they show on TV is put into a bar graph by Curtis at the end of the episode. And
Well, let's just say that Curtis is crushing it with that. He needs to be a little more careful with his edit reads. I think he should spend more of his time on the bar graphs and less on the edit tiers.
He may need to ease off the Dun chain.
Yes. Curtis is Dun chain. Like, he's going to run out of money to spend on all the gold. Like, some people had the Dun chain before, like, in the first minute of the premiere.
Yeah.
I love that he includes a preseason Dun chain.
That's incredible.
Like, he didn't give it to anybody this season, but the option is there. Like, he has it there with a tier for those people.
That's awesome. Well, according to his statistics, we have been spending about 8.5 minutes per episode with Rob and Sandra, and spending about 5 minutes per episode with whichever team ends up winning the immunity challenge. And this is in the 60-minute episodes, not in the 90-minute premieres, which is, to me, somewhat frustrating kind of precedent that I don't see going away during the pre-merge portion of this game. So not a lot with which to work this week in terms of the purple team here. But let's check in with some of these folks. And I guess let's begin with the other Terp, Nora, who we've talked a little bit about to this point. But I have gotten the vibe, Austin, and you tell me what you think here, that Nora is, while seeming to rub a lot of people the wrong way here, and I would be concerned if they were to go to a bunch more tribal councils before a swapper emerge, I am just, for whatever reason, getting the sense that Nora's not going anywhere, and I'm excited about the prospect of Nora being a big presence for quite a while on this season. What do you think about that? Is this a big character that we're going to get to know and understand why she was voted off early while she's still there, or is this someone you could see being like a defining person for this season?
I don't think that's the right either or, because I think that I agree with you that she's not going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think that she'll be a defining person of the season, so it's somewhere in between. I think that she'll be to me, she's kind of like the Big Wendy from what was it, last season, I guess?
Yeah, and to me, there would be pretty much no scenario where if Big Wendy made it 11 episodes, Big Wendy wouldn't be one of the front runners to return.
Yeah, Nora isn't quite as like cute and adorable, and so there's that. Not sorry, Nora. I mean, if you wanted to be cute and adorable, then I apologize. I don't think that's what she's going for. I think Nora is just misunderstood, and she's giving she's giving very helpful tips about how to make fire and how to clean up a camp, and people just aren't taking it the right way. I think that she's a lot of fun. I think that the upside for her is that she seems to get I think the relationship she has with Jason shows that, you know, she's more than one-dimensional. She definitely can rub people the wrong way. She's definitely being over the top. I mean, the 6 a.m. like badgering people thing was unbelievable and really great. I think that she does have the ability to connect to people one-on-one, and so she's the perfect person for those people who do connect with her to try to drag her along in the game. And that's why I think she has a little bit more longevity than someone like Wendy did, where Wendy was just such a wild card and didn't really want to strategize or be one-on-one with anybody. I feel like Nora is there to play the game. So I don't think that she's an endgame player. I don't think that we're like going to see her go to the end and be a goat or something, but I think there's a lot of potential for her to shake things up. And maybe that's with her and Jason really going far as a pair, because I do think he has a lot of legs in this game.
Yeah, that would be my suspicion as well, is it that connection with Jason and the kind of recovery he has had, I would say, since getting off to a sketchy start in the opening few minutes of the premiere when he went off and looked for the idol, is what leaves me, I would say at this hour, so optimistic about Nora's chances kind of by proxy, just because I'm feeling better and better about Jason each week, and we've seen him go out of his way to say that Nora is someone he is really hoping to bring in. So
it just seems like there's too many movers and shakers on Vokai, where I can't see them all living in harmony and going with an 8-1 Nora vote. Like, Jason would want to change things up. Jamal wants to shake things up. Tommy's always in a spot where he could step up and shake things up. Even Dan is pushing things. I know he's pushing it on Nora right now, but I just think that there's too many people. Oh, Lauren. I didn't even mention Lauren. She already did shake things up one time. Like, I don't see those kind of people being okay with a, you know, complacent unanimous vote. And for that reason, I don't see why Nora would go for any of those people.
Yeah, it's crazy now, just having spent so much time early in this podcast talking about particularly the women on the Orange team and how good I feel about all of them, as you're rattling off all these other people on the Purple Tribe, and we're not even talking about like Kelly, another person that I know a lot of people have felt good about, and Jack seems to be looking good for the most part. I would then Janet, of course, I'm the Stannet. I feel like we are in a situation, and Lauren is another one, where I feel like we're in a situation where I would very much like to see 16 of these people make it to the finale somehow, which I guess maybe Edge of Extinction is the solution. Maybe Edge of Extinction is what I've wanted all along.
Well, it's weird because I think Lyro is the more fun. Lyro? I don't really know. They're the more fun personalities, I think, but I kind of was less excited for Vokai coming in, but they seem like a pretty dynamic group of people. And yeah, there's so many people from that group who you'd want to see shake things up in the game and get to play, you know, try their hand in all of it. And yeah, Kelly didn't even come to mind for me. So that's where it's hard right now to even predict, because I don't really know who is going to go out soon. The only one I can really think of, like, I'm not going to put the dun chain on him necessarily, but I don't think Dan has really long legs in this game. But other than that, it's just so hard to predict. And that's kind of the nature of Survivor these days, is like, yeah, you can be Molly and you can be well tied in potentially, and then the next thing you know, people are calling you the biggest threat in human history and you're out.
Mm-hmm. For the record, I did put the dun chain on Dan after that scene in the premiere. There's a
different between edit and like, right, he's out soon. In-game dun chain.
Okay, yeah, I'm not putting the end game dun chain on Dan, the Dan chain, but he is the only one still for me, I would say, that is just a hard 0% to be the winner of this season.
The timeline of Nora winning is incredible.
I agree, and she would be probably the next in line at this hour in terms of least likely first place finisher, but I'm not willing to rule it out just based on how I'm not going to say eager, but at least how able Survivor has been to mess with people who try to read the edit in recent seasons. I could say, in how in love with kind of redemption arcs they have been for the last 20 years. I am not putting Nora at anything close to a hard 0%.
Okay, we're both in on Nora's winning. Sorry for getting into the edit zone early, but I'm glad we're putting our flag here now.
Easy number one candidate at this hour, yeah. So many people on this purple team are so much fun. And that's why it's kind of disappointing to me that we only get 5 minutes per week on the tribe that ends up winning the immunity challenge because we have
and
to spend.
You know what's weird with that is that when you brought up the bar graph thing is I think both of us for years have been proponents of get rid of reward challenges and we don't need them. And, you know, let's have more time at camp or more time doing other things. I think in an ideal world, I would rather us just have more time at camp. And the thing, it doesn't, I know that Island of the Idols is replacing reward challenges, so that's okay in a sense, except for the fact that we don't usually have reward challenges in the first few episodes. So I think that's why it feels like we're missing time. But in general, now I'm like sitting there during the episode and I'm like, I kind of miss everybody. Like at least at the reward challenges, you see all the people and you get the reaction faces. Like, I don't know why. And I'm sure I'll go back to not caring about them, but I've actually been missing reward challenges actively this season because I don't get to see the whole cast.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Like, I look forward to the immunity challenge because that is more time than we are going to get. Like, the majority of time that this purple team was on screen this week was during the immunity challenge rather than at their actual camp. It just, at least on paper, continues to seem quite obvious to me what the preferred scenario would be, which is no reward challenges and no Island of the Idols. Let's just see what's going on at camp.
Yeah, I mean, or 90-minute episodes, but yes, can't have it all.
Right. So another person that I thought made an interesting comment on the purple team this week, and I'm really curious to see what becomes of him as things continue here. Jamal, who narrowly survived that first vote when Molly went out and was on the outs there, he seems to find himself in this situation where he's not, at least to his face, being told, hey, you're in trouble here. People are coming up to him and making alternative plans and saying, hey, Nora seems to be a big issue. And he's starting to feel better about his situation. But the comment I found almost peculiar was him talking about how almost – I don't think he was really skeptical to an extreme degree, but he did mention wanting to have some agency of his own rather than just being told what the rest of the group wants him to do, which, while a completely understandable and good impulse in general in Survivor, it would seem to me like anyone in Jamal's position would be so happy to be, even if it was a lie, being told some other name and feeling like they were still involved in the game. And I would say, while wanting agency is very good later on, at this point for Jamal, I would have expected him to be more along the lines of, hey, whatever is getting me through to the next swap or the next round, whatever's coming next.
Yeah, you can want agency. It's totally fair to want agency, but you can get that later.
Like, right.
You can't ask, but, you know, it's kind of like the Adam Klein spot in Millennials versus Gen X. I think maybe you mentioned this a week ago or something, but he's not sitting there after the Mari vote going like, yeah, I'm going to control the vote now. No, you just try to survive for a bit to a point where you can have agency. So, yeah, I'm not sure the instincts for Jamal were right there. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, Tommy comes back and says, OK, well, Jack, you know, is easier to get back on the same page with. But Jamal, that's really the damage control I have to do, because if you cross him, you know, it's over. Mm-hmm. Which at that point, I'm like, maybe, you know, just cut Jamal loose. But I think it's still worth at least putting the feelers out and putting the effort in. And I think, am I wrong in that by the end of that whole go around with them, you know, let's target Nora, then let's target Dan, and let's target Jamal. Like, Tommy's the one who said at this point, maybe we should get Jamal out, right?
I don't have a clear memory of that, but that sounds like something Tommy would say.
Okay, well, hopefully I didn't just make it up. But I think by the end of it, he had kind of said, like, huh, Jamal's kind of, you know, stirring up more stuff. I think he was talking to Stannett. The point being that, yeah, Jamal can't, you know, you can't get the agency right away. You have to really earn that and work for it over time. And I will say, and I'll give a shout out to Matt Liguori. He's been really hyping up Jack. I don't see it totally. However, on rewatching this scene, it was very good for Jack in terms of, we see absolutely that he comes to terms with it. He's okay. And he's just kind of ready to integrate back in and take his time with it. And that, I mean, the contrast and the responses really speaks a lot to, I think the Jack way is preferred over the Jamal way. But if Jamal can make it work, you know, all the power to him. I don't really think he's in a spot to be able to do that.
Right. I think that contrast is what left me feeling so good about Jack, is it was almost heavy-handedly presented as here's Jack doing it the smart way and here's Jamal holding grudges or whatever, or, you know, not being satisfied with being bailed out of a potentially bad situation. He needs to take it to the next level and have control. I was definitely very impressed with at least the way we saw Jack handle that on TV. And maybe it was editing magic, but I guess I am overall kind of Team Liguori here insofar as I don't feel like we've seen a ton from Jack, but I do feel like we are meant to be liking what we have seen. And I think with Jack in particular, that is very much to be expected. I remember during Ghost Island, Dom made what I thought was a really astute point where Survivor started out with Colleen Haskell and then went to Elizabeth and Kim Powers and Nalia, and they just had just the kind of token America's sweetheart person. And by a certain point, you're getting to like Penny Ramsey. And he said, you know, we had Ozzy and we had Malcolm and we had Joe, and during Ghost Island he said he thought Sebastian was just kind of the Penny Ramsey of this type, and I have no idea what that would end up making Jack here, but I do feel like Jack may honestly be kind of unfairly lumped in as just the long hair surfer dude, you know, the latest incarnation of that archetype on Survivor. Based on what I've seen, it does seem like Jack has some pretty strong impulses for the game, more so than I've seen out of probably anyone but Malcolm of that group.
I mean, I guess that's fair. I don't know.
Not a high bar, admittedly. Hey, doing yeah. better than Ozzy and Joe Anglum.
I think we have to see Jack as more like, you know, to reach the kind of peak of Malcolm in his first time around, you have to be able to both blend in and get along and also be able to actually drive things to happen. And I mean, I think we have a long way to go before we see Jack do that. He was on the wrong side of one vote, and that's the only vote he's been to. So we'll set the expectations a little bit low for now. But I think that it seemed like more than just editing to me. I mean, I think even the other players were like, you're smiling, aren't you, after the vote? Like, that's, you know, in this age of Survivor, that's, I think, the reaction you kind of have to take. Like, yeah, great blindside. You guys did well, and that's okay, and I'm going to live with it. And, you know, everything in this day and age is about not making ripples and not standing out too much. And it used to be that, you know, with more passive players, you maybe could take more of the Jamal approach. And if you can grab back that power, then you have it for a while. But in this case, it's so much about blending in that I think you have to take the Jack approach.
Right. I mean, I have examples that are vivid in my mind. For instance, Debbie in Token Jeans coming back from whatever it was, like the Brendan blindside, and complimenting all the Jollipals on what a great job they did. Or Woo in Cagayan coming back after the Cliff Robinson blindside. I remember being very complimentary of Woo as we were covering that episode in real time, because I think how you handle those kind of super volatile and precarious situations that could go hard one very bad way, or at least do a little bit to make people feel like you are still down with them, are very important.
I'm trying to think of like when is the Oh, sorry, keep going.
No, 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 go ahead. I think they're very important in Survivor. End of sentence.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of what – are there any examples of, like, the burn-it-down approach actually working or somebody recovering? Not necessarily working, but I'm trying to think of a scenario where someone has, you know, come back and lit someone up for betraying them and that it's actually worked long-term from them. Like, I don't – can
One
you
comes
think of
to
any?
Mind. I don't remember – what the exact boot was, but at some point in Pearl Islands, Sandra was...
Well, that was the only one with the dumping out the fish.
Yeah, but yeah. Fortunately for her, the entire tribe happened to blame Krista instead, and Sandra
got away with it. That was the only example I could think of, but I was trying to figure out another one.
I mean, genuinely, if you think anyone who would throw out the entire tribe's food supply is a even good Survivor player, you are very much
missing
the point on this game. Anyway, neither here nor there.
There's an Easter Island statue for said player right now.
I hope that's one of the lessons, is this is how you throw out the fish and get it pinned on someone else.
I mean, I think that actually is on the table.
I mean, it's very funny to think about, like, the meeting for how all of that went down, for ideas for this twist of, like, the first one's going to be, okay, we'll have Rob and Sandra teach them fire. Awesome idea. What else do you have? We're pretty much out.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of possibilities. Like, you could have you certainly could have a dumping out, like a cause chaos kind of thing. Or maybe, like, you have to burn one item from Sandra burning the hat. You have to take one person's item to burn, and you have to strategically pick what is the person that's going to cause. Maybe, like, creating chaos is a survivor skill that always works and always gets you the win.
I mean, between how things went for Vince this week, I feel like we have seen some clip of, like, in promos for future things that are coming on the island, Rob telling someone they have to volunteer for, like, the hero portion of the next challenge. I really, and obviously the way things went for Elizabeth, by the way, in the premiere where she gets, like, duped into giving away her vote by playing this challenge she obviously has no chance of winning against Boston Rob. I wonder how many of the lessons are really just smarten up, don't listen to what people are telling you in Survivor, do your own thing.
Yeah, that's the core one. Maybe we can get you have to choose one buddy for your buddy system. There's a lot of scenarios here that could be fun.
Yeah. One final note to go back to the purple team. Final note on Jamal quickly for me. And I guess this ties into my first note of the week on Tommy. A lot of awesome headgear here on this purple tribe. Jamal does something I can't believe we haven't seen more over the years. And I'm sure he's not the first to do this, but it's been a while since I've seen someone rocking the rounded buff on head, where he rolls it into, like, a circle rather than flat on or like a crown, and he looks, I can't help but feel like he looks like he's in an 80s aerobics video with, like, his headband. He's, like, about to take on the American Gladiators. It looks so fresh out of 1988 that I really enjoy that every time it pops up. And also Tommy has his sun hat that is doing a really effective job. And I think I actually agree with a theory I heard floated by Rob Cesternino in his interview with Ron Clark this week about they may have let Tommy have a hat that big because he has such fair skin and they don't want him to get sunburnt to death.
Oh, I mean, I think it's maybe if we have, like, someone, we'll have somebody with, like, the, what is the condition where you, like, actually can't get sunlight, and they'll just have a giant sombrero.
I think that's
the next evolution of it.
They may be disqualified from the Survivor casting pool, as unfair as that may be.
That's disappointing. I hadn't really paid, I did notice the Tommy hat, but I haven't been, I know you are much more attuned to the headgear than I am, but, I have to track the Jamal one now. I didn't notice that.
It's great. So, yeah, there we go on Jamal.
Classic Jamal, just not blending in, doing his own thing.
Really standing out. What have you been thinking of Tommy to this point? He's someone we've been hearing a decent amount from, and it seems like most people, if not literally everyone, seem to really like Tommy on his tribe. Would you be one such person out there, Austin?
I mean, I think that, well, what kind of speaking to earlier, what, this casting in general, and I also feel like I can identify with Tommy, and this hasn't really come up on the show, but he's a teacher, he likes working with kids, he kind of, I think, sees a lot of good in the world and in people, and I think that vibe and that positivity, but besides that nightmare, which was, ooh, that was tough, I don't know what he was having a nightmare about, but I think that really has drawn people towards him, and I think I probably would like Tommy out there. I mean, there's nothing intimidating about him from what we've seen. I enjoyed his yoga poses last week. I think that's a solid GIF material. But, I mean, I think Tommy is playing the picture-perfect early-game Survivor in this day and age. Like, absolutely tied in. I can't even think of somebody who has really been in as good of a spot, very obviously, on his tribe. Everybody comes to him with the plans. He's always kind of in the swing spot, but he's not the only person making the swing decision. I think he was talking to Janet and was like, does this make sense for us? Like, I mean, he's really doing all the right things. And I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for him later on, whether that will hold on more tribes where he doesn't have the early relationships. But it's hard to envision someone doing possibly better right now.
Not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I do feel there is a tremendous amount of value these days in a season of Survivor in being the person the producers feel like would make the best winner. And I feel like Tommy could be off to a good start in that capacity. So definitely on the same page there, Austin. I do want to talk more about the purple team a little later in the edit zone, I think would make more sense for a lot of the rest of these conversations. But let's get into the Island of Idols this week. The orange team gets a note that Vince has been selected to go to the Island of the Idols. I don't think they know yet that it's random, unless maybe Elizabeth has said, yeah, I picked the next person out of a bag, and that must have been what happened with Vince as well. So as Vince is leaving, we get this Elizabeth confessional that I mentioned earlier about how at the Island of the Idols, I had a chance to win an idol, and I lost that chance, but I do know there's a possibility to win an idol there. So odds are Vince comes back with an idol, and we need to flush it. And that sets up that conversation where Dean says, hey, let's just split the vote. But so let's get into how this all goes for Vince and on the island itself.
Spoiler alert, poorly.
Yeah, and how it all goes sideways for Vince once he ends up getting back, because I think this is going to be one of the more interesting boots in recent memory in terms of everything just crumbling around him so quickly. And I think Island of the Idols may have played a role in that. So let's dive in.
Well, I don't know if you've already picked an episode title, but I think Ash Wednesday should be a candidate.
100% down. You are. That is. I had not picked a title, but that is it now. So
okay.
Congratulations, great. Austin, on being the first person, I believe, to ever pick a title live on air.
Better known podcast episode title.
Yeah. Yeah. So Vince comes around the corner and is shocked to see Rob and Sandra there, who put him through basic training, it seems, how to low crawl and how to hide behind this enormous fern. And by the way, the only other episode title I had been considering was quickly...
Between one fern, behind one fern.
Yes, but Mike Bloom referenced it at the beginning of the B&B this week, so I didn't want to steal. Yes. But anyway, we end up seeing Vince get this mission where he has to sneak to the other tribe's camp and steal fire from them to bring back to Rob and Sandra as proof that he was able to, I guess, traipse around covertly. And we end up seeing that their fire is out, but he gathers some ash and puts it in his go-to hiding spot, the water bottle, and brings that back. And that is good enough to earn him his idol here. So it seems, at least at first, that things are going well for Vince, but we're going to ultimately see that this is a lesson about staying calm under pressure. And by the end of this episode, Vince is going to have this idol that is only good for two rounds, and he is going to choose to sit on it and end up ending his own game in the process, as Rob and Sandra watch on from whatever it is, 10, 15 feet away, their little student that they just coached up leave with an idol in his pocket. Austin, how much do you feel like Vince being the one to go to the Island of Idols and how he handled the fallout from that had to do with him leaving? Or I haven't heard a ton of exit stuff this week, but is it potentially a different story?
Well, I think it is a big part of the story. I mean, I think that if the season is called Island of the Idols, he's going to an island. However, let's say Missy goes, you know, gets chosen and goes out there. I don't think the same thing happens. Like, I think it's impossible to I just can't imagine that dynamics go so out the window that any person who goes to this island is instantly a target. And I mean, we didn't see that with Elizabeth or Kelly, so that speaks for itself. I mean, clearly there's other things that are factors, and Vince didn't have the relationships, didn't have the alliances he needed to get by. However, yeah. I kind of wonder, like, if we had Exile Island just on its own in this season, and you know that, you know, if the mechanism for getting idols was still going to exile, like, you are so screwed if you go to one of these islands and don't get an idol or an advantage. Like, you have really an idol, because everybody's going to assume you have it. Everybody's going to think that it's a possibility. And I don't know. I mean, I guess Kelly was so sure last week, and it always, you know, there's always so much going on behind the scenes, and you have to go based on reads. But if I have an idol for 2 weeks, like, why? How could you not just play it? And I don't mean to like disparage Vince and act like it's so easy sitting on the couch, but like, I mean, you have a 50% chance of playing it. Everybody knows that you could possibly have it. It kind of just blows my mind that people aren't acting in this day and age like, I got to survive the 3 days. I got to remove the threat. There is no better way to remove the threat than to confirm and get rid of everybody's fears.
Yeah, especially this shouldn't play a role, but it would at least cross the back of my mind if I were in Vince's spot. And it will definitely cross the back of my mind if I'm a future player who has a short-term idol. Between Chris Noble and Vince, it doesn't seem like the producers hate the idea of someone who has an idol that's only good for 2 tribal councils sitting on it incorrectly and making what will look to be like one of the biggest possible blunders in the history of Survivor and one of the only like bad ways to play their situation. So that would definitely leave me more inclined to err on the side of caution for sure.
Yeah, especially when – you know, I think it's really hard to play idols in general. And I feel like I would always err on the side of just being paranoid and playing it. However, when you only have it for 2 weeks and people know that you have a shot of having it, I think it so drastically changes the calculus that the fact that people know. Even like with Elizabeth in week one, going back, I know that she got a lot of flack for playing the game and, you know, Boston Rob, you know, set his smotten up thing. But, it was a tough one in that regard because, like, you're just not going to beat Boston Rob in fire. Like, it was such a hard challenge. However, I don't really blame her for going for it because in my mind, as I'm sitting through it, like, everybody is going to think you have an idol. And so if you're not taking the chance to go play for it, you're not getting the you're erasing the possibility that you're getting the thing that they are going to be worried that you have, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's why – I mean, I said in our premiere podcast, if I was in Elizabeth's spot, I would be mad that, as they do in international versions, when someone loses their vote, that is the first vote out of the urn. Is the host right away says, no vote. Someone did something that lost them their vote. If I was in Elizabeth's position, I would actively want my no vote to be shown so people could see that I lost.
Maybe you do have that option, and in that case, she had not been forthright about it, so she wouldn't have wanted that. I am interested in kind of how the mechanism of that works in general with the no vote thing, but
they should always show it first. There's nothing but upside in showing the no votes.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah, anyway, I want to get into how Vince handled this situation, because I certainly don't mean to suggest that it was just being, you know, having his name pulled out of a hat by Kelly on the other tribe is entirely what sealed his fate, because I'm completely with you. If this were Missy or if this were Chelsea, I do not think that they would be the one who ended up leaving this week and probably not met with nearly the same level of scrutiny as Vince was. But Vince ends up coming back to camp and telling his core alliance that he showed up and was given an opportunity to play some game where he had to memorize a series of animals and then run around collecting puzzle pieces. And in order, if he completed this, he would get some sort of advantage he could use for the group with this swap coming forward. I don't think he said idol. I think he said some group advantage was the lie that he told. And
Island of the group advantage.
And this is the thing, is he's telling this to his core alliance, and he even says he's telling this to privately Missy and Elizabeth. Elizabeth can know for sure that he is lying here. I feel like Vince being essentially forced to lie about what happened on the Island of Idols is largely what sealed his fate. I do agree that there was plenty of scrutiny towards Vince either way, but I feel like if it were on the table for him to come back and tell the truth, he would have done so. And first of all, he wouldn't have even needed to do so because Elizabeth already would have done so if that had been allowed the first time. And this is exactly what I was talking about in our season premiere podcast when going so when being so adamant, I guess, about what a bad standard it is to set, that people have to lie on behalf of the producers in spots where they are under the height of scrutiny in their most vulnerable points. Like, I think it is ridiculous if having to lie to protect a production secret hinders anyone's game, even in the slightest. And when asked in his exit interview by Rob Cesternino if he would have been able to tell the truth about Rob and Sandra if he had wanted to, Vince said to Rob, "I don't think I'm allowed to answer that question." It is clear. It is so clear that everything I laid out in that premiere podcast is exactly what is happening. And I would love, like, I went back and listened to it to make sure that I would stand by everything I said back when I didn't have any idea that this is how it was going to play out. I absolutely do. And anyone who would like to go back and listen, 40-minute mark of our season one podcast, I definitely would say, feel free to go back and listen and think about who had your back as a podcaster in terms of telling you what they honestly thought, right, and who is just a little British troll.
Right.
Yes.
Well, as being in the role of Dom this week, I'm certainly not saying you are wrong about what happened. I know the whole season of podcasting has been building up to this, so I want to do this justice. However, I think it helped Vince's game? No. I'm sure it was a hindrance, and I'm sure it was not good for him. I disagree that it's the reason he got out. And I don't even think it's the – I don't think it's the number one reason. I don't even think it's the number two reason. I think that they're – it kind of to me is like blaming the refs when they made a bad call. Like, yeah, they made a bad call, but he did enough other things to tank the game. There were more opportunities for him to be in the game versus not, just because of this you know, twist – necessitating this.
I totally agree, and I'm not even saying
don't totally agree. You just said that was the reason he's out.
I think it's a reason he's out. I don't mean to suggest it's the main reason he's even necessarily out. I've tried to say I think there was probably a lot more skepticism towards Vince than we even saw during those early days, but I do think this could have potentially been what put it over the top for Vince, is being the one who now had this suspicion of having the idol and has this story that makes absolutely no sense, especially when you're Elizabeth. You know for sure that he's lying to you and your entire closest group of allies.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I think that if he comes back and tells some version of the truth, I'm not sure that people would tell all the truth, because even if he can lie, I don't know if he would necessarily tell the truth about getting an idol. So we have to keep that in mind, that in this case, I'm not really sure he'd be fully forthright to begin with. And then people could still have the suspicion of him having the idol. That's one part. The second part is that Elizabeth, like, from what it sounded like, they did actually talk about what happened, and he did come forth to her. And I realized that still puts her in the position of watching him lie, which is not good. But she wasn't, you know, she knows that he had, if this is the scenario, I'm not saying 100%, although I think it certainly seems that there's some element of that. She knows that he is in that situation, and she's not advocating to save him. She still sounded like, if anything, she really wanted to see him go. And maybe that's partially because she feels like he can blow up her secret on that. I'm not sure. That, if anything, is another scenario for me that has nothing to do with the production element, but or doesn't have as much to do. Anyway, I think that honestly the vote mostly came down to that it really did make sense to take him out to keep the rest of the tribe happy, and thinking that they were going into a swap, I think that really is the number one factor. And Chelsea talked about it. I think Missy talked about it. The fact that there would be no bloodshed if they get rid of Vince and they keep the other side happy. To me, that's honestly the number one factor in why this vote happened. And the fact that Vince went to the island to begin with, had that threat of an idol, was away from camp, wasn't making the bonds, didn't really seem clearly on either side, whether it's the girls or the guys. I think that confluence of factors is much bigger than the fact that he came back and lied about it.
Okay, and even if this had literally nothing to do with Vince being voted out, that doesn't even make a difference in terms of the larger point, which is they are completely opening the door for this to end someone's game in a similar way as may have happened with Vince. And that to me is insane. And Vince is a perfect example of what at least could go wrong when this kind of twist is in play. And that is why I was yelling so hard about it in episode one.
Sure. I don't like it either. I'm just, he literally still had an idol to protect himself, and then it would have been all wash. So
yeah,
I don't think he gets a free pass if he doesn't get an idol and he still has to lie and that causes it. Yeah, that sucks. And I think there is the scenario for what you're talking about. I just don't think in this case, like, I don't know. I operate off the, I don't want to be too mad about something that I don't think A, I can't control, and B, I don't think it's high on the list of factors for this specific case. But yes, I do agree with you. It can be a big problem. It certainly is. I think the biggest downside of the twist in general is the fact that they feel the need to keep the secret. So yes, I'm not here to talk you off your ledge entirely. I just think in this case with this week, we don't have to be so mad.
Okay, I'm certainly not trying to say that this is the only reason Vince was taken out and he would still be the front runner if
Vince
it weren't
for
the Island of the Idols.
Vince is owed $1 million.
That's exactly right. So he needs personal injury lawyer Karishma to represent him. Yeah. What do you think in terms of people revisiting the Island of the Idols? Will we see anyone go back knowing to expect Rob and Sandra?
I don't know. It seemed like next week there's a possibility that they will actually choose someone to go. I couldn't tell from the preview, and I would like to see them start having the actual choice to make. I just think that'd be more interesting. So I guess I would say I think it's I could say 50-50 is the worst answer here. Yeah, I'll say that somebody goes back twice.
I am going to say no one goes twice.
You only get one lesson. You can only be bestowed the honor of having one lesson from the greats.
I think it is. They view it as everyone who goes here gets a chance at an idol, and that is why we need to ensure that the winning tribe isn't picking someone from the losing tribe and sending the same person over and over who's going to know to expect Rob and Sandra and know they can negotiate and things like that, I think.
Well, I think they're going to couch like advantages under the idea of idols. Like you get an extra vote idol or something. I can't imagine that everything is a literal hidden immunity idol.
Oh, I think it might be. I think it might be literally.
I guess if they keep it with the expiration dates, it's possible, but.
I think it might be literally everything is a short-term hidden immunity idol.
What about an idol nullifier?
Maybe, but it's to me, it would feel like the natural thing for the producers to do is if why would we give 70% of people a shot at an idol and people who time it worse just are not necessarily screwed, but they get something worse.
Yeah. Well, I guess my second question with this is when does it become not a secret? Like when are they okay with it being out there? Because at a certain point, you know, if you have half the cast having been there and still not talking about it, it's a total farce. Like I think at some point they have to be like, okay, yeah, this is a, maybe it, is it at the merge they bring out Boston Rob and Sandra? I don't know.
That was my thought is at a certain point, the majority of the people in the game are going to know, but I really feel like they are putting a huge making a huge priority out of keeping this a secret from as many people as possible for as long as possible with no real concern over what an obvious farce that will become. I think it will be a running joke at a certain point of people understanding we can't really talk about it, but obviously we know what's going on, and it will just never make air because they, above all, I think, are in this for the shot of people coming around the corner, seeing the statues, and being greeted by Sandra and Boston Rob and being blown away that they've been there the entire time. That is why this exists.
Some moments take years to become iconic. Some are instantly iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Rob and Sandra, come out. What if they emerge at Tribal Council? They just like step out of their box and just like sit down in the jury bench.
Well, that's the other thing is they built them a spy shack. Obviously they want this to stay secret, but I am with you that I think at a certain point it wouldn't surprise me at all if Rob and Sandra come and just live at camp the same way during the early days of BB14 the coaches were just in the house as coaches before they were players themselves. I could see it just being Rob and Sandra hang out around camp as players, and that is how we justify giving them jury votes because they've been to all the tribal councils and they've lived at camp.
I think it'd be fun to have them host some challenges too, like Sandra's being like, okay, so first you go to this one and then And then now don't do that. Or I don't know. I can't do a good Sandra impression, but I feel like her explaining the rules would be incredible.
The best would be have Sandra guest host some individual reward, some reward challenge where someone, I guess it would have to be a team challenge where someone has to sit out, and then whoever volunteers to sit out is the automatic winner of the Sandra D.S. Twine challenge.
See, that was smart.
Yeah. So, all right. I guess if we want to put another over-under out there, I am operating under the assumption, or over the assumption, that it's going to be a short-term idol every time. That could obviously be proven wrong as soon as next week, but that would be my belief based on these first three episodes. It seems to me like we could be in store for a crazy number of idols at some point in this game between, obviously, Chelsea found the orange team idol. I don't think we've seen anyone find the purple team idol. Have we seen anyone find that idol?
I mean, Kelly has one, but not from camp.
Right, yeah. Kelly's got hers. Vince had his. I feel like, assuming Rob and Sandra stay on that island for quite some time and they don't move in like two episodes from now or whatever, I think the merge would be the soonest, and it would probably be even later than that. Assuming they continue putting these offers out there, I am going to set the line on total number of idols that are live for at least one tribal council. So like Vince's would count in this situation on this season at whatever the record is, plus 0.5. So like 8.5. I feel like we are potentially in store for a new record in terms of active hidden immunity idols.
Are you setting an over-under without knowing the number?
Yes, I'm setting the over-under is X.5. I guess it's easy to do. Will we set a new record for number of total active idols in a season?
I would say yes. The fact that they're binded by the time duration, that I think I would go with yes in this case. But I don't know. If the question was, will they give away at Island of the Idols other advantages, my answer to that would also be yes. So maybe if that's the case, then we don't see the record because we don't have – what is the most season? Is it Rick Devins playing 97 idols or Ben Dreebergen?
It was either 37 or 38.
I guess David versus Clyde did have a lot.
Yeah, I
don't
know. There were either 8 or 9.
I'm not really sure on the over-under. I guess I'll say under for the fun of it, but you sound like you're fully in on no, there won't be any other things given out besides idols.
Just because the first three have all been time-limited idols.
A trend does not mean it's permanent.
I feel like we would have seen something else by now if it was going to sprinkle in other things from time to time.
And I guess there's a negotiation too, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, hey, maybe someone can negotiate a Tyler Perry idol.
So it's worth a shot, at least.
It can't hurt. Yeah, so curious to see what else the Island of Idols has in store for other people who are sent there, because I agree with you that it's not going to become a precedent where every single person who goes to the Island of the Idols automatically becomes the new number one target, but as more people go and as more information potentially seeps out about what is up for grabs on the Island of the Idols, I could see that continuing to play a major role just as the game develops. Like, I think if I were on this season, I would want to be one of the people who goes early, because when word gets out about what's happening, it's already going to be at the point where I'm no longer a threat for that reason. If I ever had an idol, it would have expired a long time ago.
I kind of feel like I would just rather not go at all, but maybe that's like blasphemy as a super fan. Like, yeah, it'd be really cool to sit for a day with Boston Rob and Sandra. I don't know. I feel like one of the reasons you instantly have a lot of people talking about you and what's going on. I'm sure they speculate for the entire day out there. So I'm sure you agree. And I know this isn't the point you're making, but the top option is probably not to go at all and do the Chelsea and find an idol the other way. But I agree with you. If you can, you know, not be a Vince and survive early, then yes, I think being one of the first or the second to go is super ideal, but it seems like that was totally random. So maybe if there was a way to volunteer yourself, that'd be good, but I don't think that'd be great either. I think you're right, though.
Really smart by Elizabeth and Kelly to get randomly selected early.
Genius move.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sure plenty more thoughts on Island of the Idols as a twist as things develop in future episodes. I wanted to say quickly about the immunity challenge.
Well, I did just want to note.
Oh, like, sorry, go ahead.
For all of the flaws with, you know, we can nitpick about the twist and the implementation of it, the scene of this week was really fun. Like, I actually cackled.
Oh, of the military training and Vince.
Yeah, well, the Fern and then Boss Rob and Sandra just, you know, shooting the shit. And then Vince, you know, falling down as he's talking about Tom Cruise. Like, it was the only thing that was a downside was the rain. I also really appreciated the Boston Rob as he's explaining it to Vince. He says, you'll have to go light this torch. Well, that was really the worst Boston accent of all time. Anyway. He says you have to go light this torch, and then so clearly dubbed in is, or something else to prove this. Like, just fantastic. It was, like, so good that happened as an editor. But it was a really fun scene start to finish. Like, at the very least, I'm not going to complain that the whole task itself was so ridiculous and really enjoyable.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I know positive things about Island of the Idols is
No. one thing I'd be curious to hear about, I've so far heard mixed reviews between my sister and casual Anna about these Rob and Sandra segments. What does Danny think about the Rob and Sandra segments?
Well, first of all, I would say that Danny is not a pure casual. He's been indoctrinated into the kind of super fan, you know, world of watching, so he's not the greatest example. I actually did try to message I have a casual friend at work. We were going to have casual Jason thinks, that would have been a true litmus test. I think that from what I get the sense of that they're enjoying it, the casuals I know, everybody likes the tribal council booth. That's a fun addition. I think that's a universal success. But I don't think that people are as worried about the kind of time away it takes. Certainly people are not thinking as in depth about the sort of deception element of it as we've talked about here. So, you know, when you erase those concerns, I think it's, you know, on the surface, a fun twist that brings back nostalgia. It implements, you know, new elements to the game. It's creative. It something we haven't seen before, certainly with this week. And honestly, I was thinking recently, like, why? I always liked the old seasons where you had the tribes kind of like cross camps, or was it a Guatemala? Was that the one with the pool? So I think the fact that we got like a cross tribe camp thing was fun to begin with. But I think casuals, I would say casuals are thumbs up, but you tell me what you hear.
You have
a better pulse of the casuals.
That seems to be the general consensus. My sister says the Rob and Sandra segments are, quote, totally embarrassing, and shout out to her for being right.
But she's so woke.
It does seem like the majority of the casuals are on board with whatever gets them more Boston Rob.
The episode 2-1 was rough, I think. It wasn't the most compelling. But she thought this week was embarrassing too?
I would guess so. I haven't heard from her about this week. But Anna, the reason I say Rob and not Sandra is because casual Anna is the one that I'm usually asking for the casual take on. And she tends to, for whatever reason, put a little more focus on Rob. Her review of this week's episode was, I want more Rob and Dean is so hot.
See, I told you it was an important point to make.
Yeah, that was this week's casual review. So maybe 8.5 minutes, not even close to enough for the casuals in terms of the Rob and Sandra content. And honestly, like, I do get it. I understand that is immensely important for CBS. It's just frustrating for many different reasons for someone in exactly my position. But
I would love to know the polling, like, they're not polling the numbers of if it actually moves the needle in any way. Like, my guess is that people, you know, they are appeasing the viewership, but I still, you know, I don't think it's drawing in new viewers. I think All Winners has the potential to, but I can't imagine that many people who haven't watched Survivor in a while are tuning in because Rob and Sandra are involved.
Yeah, I can't either. I think they may see the commercials and say, oh, I've heard the name Boston Rob a few times. I guess that's who that guy is, but I'm still not going to watch.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So only thing that I wanted to say about this immunity challenge as the official Stannet is Janet did a very good job keeping up with Olympic swimmer Elizabeth during the water portion of this challenge, and that was awesome. I didn't know that swimming was some huge part of Janet's background either, but I did hear that that was a showdown people were apparently looking forward to quite a bit. But as a complete blindside to me, I was like blown away that Janet was able to hang with Elizabeth there until...
I'm pretty sure Janet could qualify for like half of the world's Olympic swimming teams.
Oh, yeah. I feel like not even just swimming. I thought you were going to say Janet could qualify for like half of the Olympic teams in various sports.
We've got Janet in the fencing world championships.
Yeah, I feel like she could definitely go out there and at least get a bronze or something. So, yeah.
Brains Beauty bronze.
Yeah, that's right. So her team is going to actually fall behind a little bit because she struggles with the knots underwater, but they're going to make a huge comeback. Orange.
Well,
is
I will say the history of her with the swimming is that she's like been a lifeguard for like 30 years. And, like, she's, like, apparently, like, a legit lifeguard. Like, she's part of the lifeguard community. So I'm kind of concerned that the swimming was easy, but the diving was not. Because I feel like the diving is really what you'd want from a lifeguard.
So most people, it sounds like, are lifeguards for a little bit. They're really just summer guards. She's a real lifeguard. She's in it for life.
Yeah, lifer guard.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Thank you, Austin. Yeah, it's always very constructive to have someone on the podcast who's not just groaning at all my puns.
No, it's amplifying. I really I feed off your energy.
We can workshop them and we can come to a happy conclusion. It's great. So the purple team is going to make a big comeback on the puzzle here. We've talked about Vince and how things went wrong for him, but as I was watching this episode, as such a firm believer in the idea that the women are good to go, at least in the short term here, I was really not open to the possibility that Karishma was going to be the one getting voted out. And while I was saying to myself, this Tom storyline seems way too obvious, I also felt like it basically had to be Tom, and I was still shocked that it ended up being Vince. But where were you on that?
No, I was on the same page. I was leaning Tom. I think I said out loud, oh, I think it's Tom. Wow. Really strong take there. I think they presented a case for all three, and I kind of feel like the Tom boot edit that we got there was very sufficient for what we'd get in past seasons. Like, there was the era of editing where it was extremely obvious. Then there was the era where you got enough of the decoy that, or the second person, that it then was a second person. And now I feel like we're full circle where they're willing to present three options at any time. And if it's two, it could go back to the first or the second. Like, I mean, you've talked about kind of the winner edit ambiguity we get these days, but I think they have done a really good job mixing up the actual boot edit one, because I think Tom's would have been sufficient to go. I think some people have said that he didn't have enough of a story to get out, but you know, we saw that he was kind of chilling and he was the dad person. Like, we've seen that person go before if they're not playing hard enough. Yeah. So I was on the side of Vince or Tom, less so Karishma.
Yeah.
But I do want to, before we move off the immunity challenge, I mean, got to give Keir Hoffman some credit for that teeter-totter. I thought that was really cool.
I did. Yes, absolutely. I thought that challenge was very cool, and the balance portion in particular I thought was awesome. The team balance beam or teeter-totter was a really fun element in there, and even if it was
tall.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it is essentially an obstacle course followed by a puzzle, I think they've been doing a much better job this season, largely because of the water that they've been incorporating. That like crisp blue really makes the challenge pop so much better than it does on sand.
Oh, that water was so clear and good. Yeah. And well, it did seem unfair that Missy's like superb wingspan, like the Jay Billis, like the wingspan draft metrics, like you really had to put that to use in this challenge. Like, Kelly couldn't even reach any of it. I don't know how she was possibly going to get the bags, and Missy's just like casually reaching out there.
You're really going to reference a Duke guy instead of, I don't know, Steve Blake's wingspan?
No. It's not Jay Billis's wingspan. Jay Billis is obsessive about wing. I can't get around that one.
Yeah.
There's how many Duke people are on this season? As far as I know, zero.
So I meant to make a Duke superiority joke earlier and spaced on it, so I'm glad that I found another opportunity.
I didn't realize you were – where's Duke Survivor been? I mean, Duke is not giving you what Maryland has given you.
Have there been any notable Terrapins in the past?
I don't think so. I don't even know if there have been any Terrapins at all, but I'm trying to think of if I'm
– People from somebody, Maryland? Is Lauren Rimmer from Maryland? She's got that kind of regional accent, but I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, I know we talked about the Baltimore thing or whatever. Oh God, my geography. Who else is from?
I could tell you all the main survivors for sure.
I need to pull up like the Survivor Wiki or something. There's got to be a geographic divide. Stand by on the best player.
Okay, to be potentially resolved later. I'm sure that information exists somewhere, but I certainly don't have it. Credit to Kierhofer, I would say, for another really good challenge, and I've been very much enjoying the challenges this year compared to the last couple of seasons there, for sure. So one thing I wanted to ask about is at this...
Christian Hubicki.
Oh, Christian Hubicki's from Maryland.
Yeah, he's from Baltimore, yeah.
All right, cool. A very good person to have on the squad. I was wondering what you thought in... I guess we are in October of 2019, about the current state of whispering at Tribal Council after we see Karishma seem to make almost a half-hearted effort, I would say, compared to most of the other last-minute whispering we've seen over these past couple of years. Is this getting to the point of oversaturation for you?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this because I've been actually very anti-whispering from the start. I thought it was fun the first time it happened, kind of, but I was instantly very concerned with the future of it. I'm glad it hasn't been – I mean, it happens every season, but it doesn't happen every tribal council. That was, like, the worst-case scenario for it. But I'm anti-whispering. I don't see any reason why if you're going to have tribal council and you're going to say that this is an open forum and people can, you know, air their stuff and this is your last chance to change things up, I think it's totally within production's right to ban whispering. Like, I think people should have to put it out there in the open. And – I was kind of frustrated because on a selfish personal level, I had, you know, before the first whispering had happened in Game Changers or whatever it was it Game Changers? Was it the JT one?
Yes.
The Malcolm Boot? Yeah. So right before I already filmed All Stars and there was the whole vote with the fake idol with Shabrina. And, you know, that was a really fun one where people, they were doing some whispering, but a lot of it was very out in the open. And it was like, to me, that was like that hadn't really happened. And then all of a sudden, there's all these tribal councils airing with freaking whispering all over, and it becomes to like a tired trope at that point. And I don't know. I think there could be a rule to keep whispering out of it, or you know, maybe you can do a little bit of whispering, but you have to actually talk about what's going on. I don't know. I'm definitely over it, and I really appreciated Tom for being the like curmudgeonly. This is all an act. This is ridiculous, and it did seem very odd in this case. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, historically. I have been not only the Stannet, but also the pro-whispering guy. When JT did it in Game Changers and everyone was all up in arms, I was adamantly in favor of this finally becoming a thing. I couldn't believe it wasn't a thing long ago. And I will say, if it became a weekly occurrence, I would totally agree with you. And as a producer, I would not like it. But in thinking purely in terms of what will make the most exciting television, if people are allowed to whisper to each other, that opens the door for some crazy vote to go down much more easily than does forcing people to say everything aloud.
The problem is, though, I think to me the beauty of Survivor is these plans that unfold over time, and you have these long-term storylines that kind of culminate in the vote. And you see that develop in camp life. You see these blind sides develop with the conversations. Like, look at the, you know, still one of my favorite episodes ever is the Sarah Lucina, Officer Sarah Boot in Cagayan. And that didn't happen because of some tribal council whispering. The best we got is, in terms of a live tribal there was people talking about plans and counter plans and doing this coded language. But that happened out in the open. And the beauty of the blind side and the flipping happened at camp. And we got to see the pieces of that. I just think that if you limit all of the strategy to tribal council And you, A, we can't hear it. We don't really know what happened. And B, none of it before that happened before really even mattered. Then I think you invalidate kind of the rest of the show at these long-term arcs. Like, it's great to have the chaos in the moment, but in that case, let's not even strategize after the challenge. Let's just go straight to tribal and do it there. I just don't think that's as fun to me.
I definitely see what you're saying, and I agree that it could definitely lead to a lot of situations where a wacky vote comes in and they have no real way of explaining how it turned out that way, because all of the critical decisions happened in hushed tones at tribal council in the span of 30 seconds when a name was ultimately finalized, and that's the way it ended up going, as opposed to the classic kind of Survivor storytelling that we are used to, and with good reason. I think that is the way, like, the best way in a perfect world to tell the story, but as long as it doesn't become this super regular thing that is really impeding their ability to tell, like, a coherent story for the course of a season, I do think it would be a mistake to outright ban whispering at tribal council while it still is at least manageable, because I do think the upside is still very much worth it.
Well, the one that I enjoyed the most, I think, was actually last season, where you had very clearly it was kind of Julie blowing up and changing her mind and causing all of this chaos. And so part of it did happen out in the open. And so I don't mind the whispering as much when we get a sense of how this is devolving. When it's just that we're changing things up fully in whispers, to me, it ruins the flow of the kind of the narrative and the storylines. And to some extent, I think maybe one fix is, like, you can't get up and move around, because that, you know, that inhibits, there's no reason to do anything out in the open or anything across multiple people if you can just get up and walk around and then have this total chaos.
So Dom has said that many times when I've made this point. To me, that puts way too much of a priority on sitting in the middle at tribal. Okay, that like saying you can whisper but you can't get up is way worse than just blanketly removing it. It's why I would much rather they say no whispering period than you can only whisper to the people you're next to, because it is such an advantage to be in the middle in that case.
I don't think there's a very set answer, and I think that it seems like it's probably going to be okay because of the fact that, you know, it's impossible to deal with this chaos all the time, and if there was the whispering at every tribal, then nobody could ever have a clear sense of what's happening in the game, and so players still want that stability of understanding a plan going into tribal for the most part.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's probably self-regulating enough that we don't need to outright ban it. I don't know. I just don't want to see it happen all the time.
Sure. So Austin, before we get into the edit zone, any parting thoughts on Vince or the optics of this guy who just got coached up from the two people who've solved Survivor on how to stay calm under pressure, then staying calm under pressure and meeting his ultimate demise?
Well, maybe the lesson is that it's not as easy as it seems for these legends, and that's why they're legends. I mean, honestly, I think that if you're watching the twist and really thinking that it's, oh yeah, we need to teach these players and they're going to learn the game from this, then I think you're watching it wrong. Not to just criticize people, but, you know, it's clearly something that's designed to create entertainment and create fun and bring these people in. And you can't, you know, Survivor is so much about reacting and adapting and understanding the people you're around, and you can't do that from being on a separate island doing some random challenge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe if they were immersed in the game, and maybe later in the game, if they actually do talk through alliances and here's the person, you know, can you trust these people when they know them? I don't really want to see that happen, but I think that actually could be more useful to a player in terms of understanding. And I was thinking, like, if I'm on the season, I just don't want these outside influences being involved at all that I have no insight into. But, you know, I don't think it's bad optics for the twist, because I don't think the twist is really for that. I think it's meant to create moments and drama, and it did in this case, and he got an idol and didn't play it, and he did all this crazy stuff at camp. So to me, it worked just fine, and that's an equally valid option from this twist. You know, it doesn't need to just be that someone graduates from the school of Boston Rob and Sandra, and now they're this amazing Survivor player. I don't even want to see that, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, although I'm totally with all that, although I do think our ultimate winner will be fully endorsed by both Rob and Sandra over the course of the season.
The super delegates?
Yeah. all right. So, Austin, before we hit the edit zone, I know some people are a bit averse to incorporating the editing techniques into their consumption of the show. So for anyone tuning out now, where can they be finding you on Twitter?
You can find me at Austin Tatius with two. It's my name, A-U-S-T-I-N. T-A-C-I-O-U-S-S, because some jerk took the one with one S and then never used the account. So you can find me there. And like I said, Survivor Rail on YouTube channel, whatever. I tweet about Survivor and other things, but usually Survivor because my other ones don't get any likes. So
all right.
I love the positive feedback and reinforcement.
I know how that is to a horrifying extent. All right. So brutal. I am on Twitter at Colin Stone, where you can not like any of my tweets either. And I think without further ado, let's dive into the edit zone.
Well, people can't like your tweets because you delete them. What's the point? They're not even making them.
There
mark.
Was no further ado before the edit zone. Thank you very much, Austin.
You are listening to the
Tom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken,
Brad Culpepper, Rob and Sandra.
You are listening to the
Tom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, here we are in the edit zone, and Austin, as someone who has edited many seasons of College Survivor yourself, who is your number one at this hour?
Well, I think that for me, it's a tier of two. I'm going to give a cop-out answer. Sorry, but that's how I feel. To me, it's Missy and Tommy are the clear top two.
Okay. I am definitely on board with both of them, and I would say I would maybe even have a bigger tier. I feel like Missy, Tommy, Chelsea, I think, deserves to be at least near the top. I would say Kelly probably deserves to be near the top. And I've been a big believer in Jason to this point as well. I'd say that is really my top tier at this point.
So I'm largely on the same page as you. I don't think that it's a big gap between the tiers. I have Chelsea and Jason next, and I may put Jack in that. I may be being convinced on Jack. But you know what? The Matt Liguori school of editing, I got to say. It's led me astray before. I was all in on the Nick – well, not all in, but I fully concerned about the Nick Wilson edit in David vs. Goliath. And Matt Liguori and all of these people told me, no, don't worry. It's not a thing. And you know what? It was. It was a thing. So anyway, I'll keep Jack in there, though. I was a little bit more impressed on the rewatch.
Liguori still thinks Sydney is going to win Ko-Rong.
I think she did win Ko Rong. The real controversy was not Michelle versus Aubrey, it was Sydney.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, but, I feel like
I'm not sure why. So I don't know what I can't articulate the difference between Missy, Tommy, and why I wouldn't have Chelsea and Jason in that tier. I guess with Jason I would say there was a little bit of, you know, a negative start for him, and as we've said, that's certainly does not rule out being a winner. But it was in a sense where I like such a mistake like that right away. I don't know if I feel great about his winner chances in terms of just what I've seen from him so far.
I can't imagine anyone ever editing an eventual winner to look like they got off to a very bad start, only to drastically turn things around.
I know, very hard to believe. Maybe this makes me a total hypocrite. With Chelsea, I can't really articulate why I think that she's just a tier below Missy and Tommy. I guess it's the sense for me that I've kind of felt like we haven't gotten as well-rounded of a look at her, and maybe that's true for Tommy, too. Like, I don't know if there's been the personal content, but for Tommy, like, we've seen less of Vokai, and yet we've seen him play, as we talked about, this just flawless game. And I think Chelsea's been doing really well, too, but her edit feels a little bit more necessary to me. Like, she found that idol. She's been an integral part of this girls' alliance or whatever. I don't know, but you could certainly put those people in there. I would say I'm not sold on the Kelly thing, and I know people have been really high on her. I like her, but I'm not as sold on her in terms of like that she's really got winners upside at this point. I mean, I think that's a misspoke. I think she does have winners upside. I just don't think she's in a tier with the rest of them at the top, if you want to explain that.
I mean, you just dunchained Kelly, so I don't know what to tell you. So.
I didn't dunchain Kelly.
Yeah, I
unintentional.
It may just be my personal bias towards Kelly and how much I like the way she's handled all of the situations she's been put into this
point. I thought
you were
going to say how much I like the way she looks. That's like,
okay,
what?
Enough, Dom. where I feel like she right away had a pretty tough situation with Dan, and then immediately gets sent to the Island of the Idols, where she has to come up with this lie to tell her entire tribe. And at least so far, it seems like she's handled all of that really well. So while she's not standing out in as noticeable of a way as someone like Tommy is, for instance, particularly on her tribe, I just have so much liked what I've seen out of Kelly that I would certainly not be ruling her out at this point, and I would be putting her in the camp of people I just feel the best about out of this entire cast to handle whatever situation in a smart way.
To be clear, not ruling her out.
I heard Dunchain, so.
Not ruling her. She does have winner's upside. I guess I just think that and this isn't necessary in this day of editing, I think, but I would like to see a little bit more of her perspective on the tribe dynamics. She talked about Dan, and I think she had a great moment after Island of the Idols, but, you know, she had to get that Island of the Idols scene. It was a pretty important thing that she found an idol and then kept it secret. I guess we didn't see Vince come back this week, so maybe it wasn't necessary, but I would like to see a little bit more of her strategic insight into how the dynamics are and what's going on, and I feel like that's the part that's missing for me so far.
I feel like for the last many seasons, since at least HHH, one of the people that we have been looking at as one of like the edit front runners through the first three or four episodes ends up leaving in like episode five or six or something like that. So out of this group of Tommy, Chelsea, Missy, Jason, and Kelly, I will generously put in this tier, she may stand out as the person potentially most likely to fill that, because I am getting pretty strong this person will make the merge vibes from all of Missy, Chelsea, Tommy, and Jason.
I think so too. I maybe this is just me having a fear of my tarps, you know, like being protected over my babies, but I'm Chelsea, for whatever reason, is the one I'm most paranoid about. And yeah, I think that's fully because I just don't want her to leave. I could see it being one of them, but I think the merges are big enough these days that maybe we can skate by with those top four all making it, or okay, five, whatever it is. Yeah. I'm actually not that worried about Kelly.
All right. So you're taking the Dunchain off?
The Dunchain has been taken off and stored for further use.
Okay.
I did the anti-Curtis Morrison.
In terms of other winner candidates, I feel like the other three, women in that Orange Team alliance have all gotten a decent amount of development in Karishma, Elizabeth, and Elaine. Are any of them standing out to you as winner candidates?
Elizabeth is jumping up for me, and I think I could put her in a second or third tier. I've been, like I said earlier, I've been impressed with her so far. And I wouldn't rule out Elaine, because even though she's been pretty quiet the last 2 weeks, she got such a great edit and story in week one that I think she can afford that. And we've established her as a character. So if she does pick it up in the next few weeks, I think that'll be the test to see if she really is going to be a key player down the line. The only other people that we haven't mentioned that I feel decent about having chances are, I think that if Janet were to win, this is pretty much what we'd see so far. I think everything she's been shown in has looked good. And she's been involved in all the episodes, and the swimming was highlighted. Like, I'm not sure we would get a giant edit from Janet right away. This is
the
who
fire
she is.
Was highlighted as well, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean, she really made a great impression in episode one, but I think she's followed that up by being pretty keen as well.
Yeah.
So I, you know, to me, this is the prototype of what we'd get if someone like Janet wins the game. I think it's not usual that somebody like Janet wins the game, but if we were to see that, this is what we'd see.
I'm with that for sure. And I thought Janet, not only her skills around camp, but also what little we've gotten to see of Janet talking and strategizing with other people, I've been really impressed with Janet saying the exact right things as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the scenes we've had with her interacting with people, like she's listens, she doesn't overreact, she's keyed into what's going on. I agree. I think that she's been shown to have a good physical and social strategic prowess. And I mean, what more can you ask for in an older person that's going to last long in the game?
Yeah. And anyone else on your radar?
I'm not ready to give up on Lauren. I really, really liked her in episode two, and I think she's a lot of fun. I think there's the possibility that she kind of emerges as a big pre-merge character that gets taken out for being a threat and being a mover and shaker. But if we start to see a little bit more of Okai or see her make moves, like I really like what she brings to the table. So she got a lot of good content in episode two. The question will be is will she get more than that, I think?
Yeah, I completely would be with that. If we show up here for episode four and Lauren has another big week, I could see her vaulting to the top of next week's edit zone, and it could just be a function of her team winning the first and third immunity challenges that has kept her lower key to this point. I don't think anyone else is jumping out at this point to me.
Well, we did already declare that Nora's the winner, so we should probably.
Well, again, no one is jumping out, but Dan continues to be the only person that I would say is a hard 0%. So anyone other than Kelly for you that you have drawing dead?
Jesus. Dean would probably be the only other one. I'm willing to put my chips in that pot.
Okay, I think that is the next most likely bet at this hour. Austin, any other season 39 takes or anything else that you wanted to get to?
I think I'm good. I just wanted to say, Colin, that you may suck at puzzles, but you're really good at blindsides.
And I'm just going to laugh like Tom, even though I was on the outside of how all of that went down, and pretend I feel good. So thank you so much for coming on. Always a great time talking to you. One more time, Survivor Maryland available on YouTube, and you can be following Austin on Twitter at Austin Tatius. Austin, I will be seeing you tomorrow.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
Oh, I'm no, not, you're not no. coming?
No.
Okay, never mind.
I'm sorry for ruining your night.
I had it in my head that you guys were going to be there, but apparently I won't be seeing you.
No, everybody's been claiming that we're making a surprise appearance. I legitimately can't go, and Danny legitimately can't go. So, unfortunately, no, I will not be in New York. I greatly apologize. Please take my podcasting tonight as me spending the week with you.
Okay, well, everyone should be on the lookout for Austin and in New York for his surprise appearance tomorrow. Thank you so much for coming.
Please don't get your hopes up.
Yeah. One more time, he is on Twitter at Austin Tatius with two S's. I am at Colin Stone. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. And you can get weekly bonus episodes if you'd enjoyed this, covering classic seasons, just about done with Guatemala, over at patreon.com/DomAndColin. And by the way, last week's Patreon episode, the official Survivor Australian Survivor All-Stars must win draft. A lot of hyphenated words going on in there, but I took on Mike Bloom in a draft that took over 2 hours, going through the 24 contestants on the upcoming Australian Survivor All-Stars. So anyone interested in that, one more time, patreon.com/DomAndColin. Thank you guys.
You could probably cut this out, but I did have an answer for the Maryland people.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
I just came to that. Sorry. Please go support the Patreon and listen to the episodes. However, additionally, you could get more content like this. Maybe there's a Maryland ranking. So Colleen Haskell, born and raised in Bethesda, Maryland. That's a good one. Jerry Manthe attended the University of Maryland in Munich, Germany, which I'm not sure how that works, but I guess it's
– That seems counterintuitive.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Kim Johnson, we mentioned her. Two references for Kim Johnson today. Or no, you said Kim Powers. Never mind. I always confuse that. She was born and raised in Maryland. Pretty good. Pretty good people.
And then they just stopped casting them after season three, as it turns out.
Big Ted. Big Ted. Baltimore, Maryland.
Wow.
And a lot the of biggest OGs. One of all, Trish Dunn.
Which Trish? Is that Pearl Island's Trish?
That's Pearl Island's Trish.
So there's like a Maryland person on every season, as it turns out.
Maryland is a real casting hotbed for Survivor, awesome. As it's already been known, but yeah.
Yeah, Austin, as mentioned, I am going to be in New York. Dom is going to be in New York. Historically, the post-Know-It-Alls episode is one where Dom is traveling back to wherever he lives at that point in time, and I will be in here with a guest. It appears that is going to be the case next week, and as a little teaser, very exciting guest lined up. No, not that Austin isn't exciting himself, but someone, a Survivor alum who has been on this podcast before, but it's been a while, so definitely be ready for that. Maybe I just jinxed it, and Dom's going to be around, and that's going to get thrown in the garbage, but we potentially have an exciting episode coming up next week as well, so thank you guys who have made it this far. We will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.